More products coming in than going out.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis. The trade deficit's getting bigger, and so's the Federal Reserve's coffers. All that coming up. The markets have been open now about 20 minutes, so we're going to ask that question. Where's Wall Street? Numbers are down right now. The S&P down about 0.7%. The NASDAQ a full percent down. The Dow is off about 52 points, 10,611, and we have markets down in Europe right now, more than a percent. Markets in Asia closed mixed today. Hong Kong stocks were down for the most part as well. The U.S. trade deficit, as I mentioned, widened in November to its highest level in nearly a year. Stronger demand for imports from both consumers and from manufacturers seems to be driving that. And we're going to get some analysis this morning from Julie Nieman, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So we know a lot of this is oil. And the price of oil was a little lower a couple of months ago in November than it is today. We're talking $82, $83 a barrel oil now, and the demand is the same. Are we headed for more trouble?
Well, demand actually has not risen at all. You're looking at the price of oil going up. And oil basically has been trading like a currency, kind of a pseudo-financial instrument. So oil trades when you've got a weak dollar, oil is strong. Big purchases for exchange-traded funds. But bottom line is, it's really a commodity, and there's a lot of it. It's not black gold.
And with the trade number, Julie, we got word that exports rose. Cars, industrial machinery, a lot of that going out. That's good news, right?
That's a positive, especially because of the weak dollar. We're very competitive worldwide for consumer products now, and especially on the manufacturing side. That's going to be the side that brings us out of the recession, the manufacturing, not housing.
And a lot of that tied to the dollar, right?
You bet it does. Yeah. Continued weak dollar makes us, again, very attractive.
Yeah. So I've been seeing a lot of reports about President Obama's plans to assess taxes or fees on banks to help repay TARP and maybe even shave some of the deficit, Julie. I mean, what's this about? Are we talking about punishing banks for the bonus issue, or are we looking for ways to recover TARP money?
Unfortunately, I think it looks like a lot of financial theater at this point. They think that the public wants a really good flogging of the banks, but what we really want is restitution. It doesn't address the problem that we taxpayers just bailed these too-big-to-fail banks out with TARP and FDIC, and now they're making huge profits. And they're not doing it by lending. They're using our money and risking trading operations and asset values. They should be plowing the money back into their capital base and lending.
All right, Julie Nieman, thanks.
You bet.
All right. Being a central bank seems to have its rewards these days. The Federal Reserve said today it made a record profit in 2009, primarily due to interest earnings on securities. Marketplace's Sam Eaton is with us live in our Los Angeles studio with the latest on that. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, Steve.
So what kind of profits are we talking about here?
Well, the Fed made about $46 billion last year off of its aggressive efforts to avert a total economic meltdown. And this is good news for the federal budget because the record windfall goes straight to the U.S. Treasury. Now, to add a little context here, these profits are bigger than they've ever been in the central bank's near century-long history.
And why is the Federal Reserve raking in so much cash?
Well, in response to the economic crisis, the Fed bought up government debt and the mortgage securities in record amounts as a way to inject cash back into the economy. And now the interest income from those investments is paying off in spades. Even the emergency loans it made to the banks are bringing in big profits.
And those gains, Sam, come with certain amounts of risk, right?
They do. Higher returns on investments never come for free, obviously. I spoke with Diane Swonk. She's the chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and here's her take.
What the Fed has done is essentially moved out into the market and played a role much like a private investor, taking up a place that private investors disappeared from. In doing that, they also took on more risks than they did in the past.
So if, for example, the Fed was forced to sell some of those assets at a time when the price for those securities was low, they could be in for a big loss. One thing that's worth noting here is a big difference between the Fed and private investment firms. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke still brings in just under $200,000 a year in salary, and there's definitely no bonus tied to
no
that.
No bonus there. All right, Sam Eaton joining us here in the studio. Sam, thanks.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, January 12th, 2010, at marketplace.org. The European aircraft maker Airbus says the future of its A400M military cargo plane is in doubt. If European governments fail to cough up more cash, Airbus will cancel production. That move could cost thousands of jobs. We're going to bring in Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard, who's with us from London right now. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Steve.
So what's this aircraft designed to do?
It's a very big military transporter, not a jet, a turboprop plane, capable of carrying a lot of heavy military equipment and troops. It's much bigger than the old Lockheed warhorse, the Hercules, but smaller than the Boeing C-17, which is truly massive. In that sense, the A400M fills an important gap between these two other transporters.
And what's going on here? I mean, what's the problem? Is this technical? Is it financial?
Well, there have been technical problems. There always are. But they're not thought to be insuperable. Money is the real issue. It's proving a lot more expensive than Airbus originally thought. It's $7 billion over budget. And Airbus is asking the seven mainly European countries that ordered the plane to pay more for it. But these governments are running out of cash. They're reluctant to cough up more money. So what we have now is a game of poker. I mean, Airbus is saying we'll cancel this project if we don't get more money. Some of the governments are saying no way. So we'll see who blinks first.
All right. Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Remember Diebold, the company that makes ATMs but also made voting machines that election experts criticized for being insecure and inaccurate? Well, in September, Diebold sold the voting machine business to its biggest rival, Election Systems and Software, or ES&S for short. Now the Justice Department reportedly plans to sue the company on antitrust grounds, Brett Neely reports.
Bev Harris with the advocacy group BlackBoxVoting.org is for breaking up ES&S.
What you have is a single entity taking control over the programming and the counting of the votes in 74% of the jurisdictions in America.
And she says a monopoly can also lead to higher maintenance costs. The Justice Department wouldn't comment, but ES&S spokesman John Gross says the voting machine industry has to consolidate.
We just don't see how it will support very many suppliers because it is not a large marketplace.
Activists have complained for years that voting machines can be hacked. Computer scientist Michael Shamos at Carnegie Mellon says the machines are safer than critics charge. But he says the industry has a bigger problem, reliability.
If electric shavers failed as rapidly as voting machines do, we would raise the hue and cry.
Shamos says that makes election officials even more worried about an industry monopoly. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
For only the second time in Super Bowl history, television ads for football's mega championship event have dropped in price. TNS Media Intelligence reports CBS is selling 30-second spots during the Super Bowl for between $2.5 and $2.8 million. They went for a record $3 million on NBC last year. Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon has more.
There's a touch of irony in this commercial from last year's Super Bowl.
Come on, people. We got to focus. We're not leaving until we've met our budget. We need ideas.
We could cut back on marketing.
It turns out a guy who suggests not buying beer for staff meetings gets thrown out the window, but it's the one who talked about cutting back on marketing that ad agencies and networks undoubtedly would prefer to get the heave-ho. Advertising is among the first things to go when consumers are less likely to buy, so why would any company still spend up to $2.8 million for just 30 seconds of our attention? Professor Jim Albright teaches advertising at the University of North Texas.
The smart ones always say that during the bad times, the pie gets smaller. So you should spend more money on advertising to get a bigger piece of shrinking pie.
Albright says that's why it's actually a good time to be buying a spot on the Super Bowl. He remembers it wasn't always such an image builder back when he was a national ad man writing Super Bowl commercials for Frito-Lay.
It didn't seem the matter of pride that it is now. It just was another buy to me at the time.
But now he says it makes good sense to be buying into the big leagues, especially with all the free publicity the ads get every year. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Temperatures are beginning to moderate this week here in the United States after a cold spell gripped much of the east. Florida was hit hard with sub-freezing temperatures over the sensitive region that grows a heck of a lot of oranges for the nation. You might think the price of orange juice will go up with the toll the orange crop has taken, but is that really the case? From Station WGCU in Fort Myers, John Davis reports.
It's too soon to quantify how the cold temperatures will affect Florida's $9 billion a year citrus industry. Gene McAvoy of the University of Florida says growers are working to protect their groves and stop long-term tree damage.
A lot of these damaged tissues, you know, if you get a leaf that's been frostburnt, is an opening for disease to come in, so they'll be applying more fungicides and trying to counteract some of those type of effects.
The USDA releases its monthly report on citrus this morning. The report sets the prices growers can get for their fruit. But Andrew Meadows of Florida Citrus Mutual says the report isn't the only factor that affects the price of orange juice.
Retail prices are affected by how much production is not only in Florida but in Brazil as well, which is a major exporter to the United States.
Cold weather losses will likely be factored into retail prices after the USDA's February report. Nearly 70% of the country's citrus comes from Florida. From Fort Myers, I'm John Davis for Marketplace.
From orange juice to a new fad in sport drinks, big beverage companies are investing millions in coconut water. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler tells us they're betting American consumers will drink it up in groves.
Many Americans have heard of it.
Get your coconut water.
Harry Belafonte and other singers have touted the tropical cure-all for years.
Coca got a lot of iron. Make you strong like a lion.
But selling coconut water in this country is a fairly new idea. Not one, but three brands are vying to break into the U.S. market. One drink is called Vita Coco. Another brand, Zico, has attracted investment from beverage giant Coca-Cola. Rival Pepsi is jumping in with both feet. It recently bought the largest coconut water company in Brazil, and Pepsi Bottling has a U.S. distribution deal with a drink called One.
It's truly nature's sports drink.
Rodrigo Veloso is CEO and founder of One. The letters O-N-E stand for One Natural Experience.
Coconut water has everything that an athlete is seeking. You have the hydration through the electrolytes and 660 milligrams of potassium, which is more potassium than a banana.
I asked John Seisher, editor and publisher of Beverage Digest, are Americans ready for coconut water?
American consumers in recent years have become more like Japanese consumers in that they are interested in experimenting with new kinds of beverages. And Coke and Pepsi and Dr. Pepper Snapple are continuously looking for new ideas and new kinds of beverages.
In terms of coconut water, so far, Seisher says,
no one really has broken through yet.
Most of the coconut drinks sell for around $2 a piece. Rodrigo Veloso says his drink isn't just for athletes. It can also be marketed to party animals.
Coconut water is the ultimate hangover prevention.
It's the rehydration, he says, that staves off the hangover. If the idea catches on, you might soon hear people asking bartenders for their favorite alcohol mixed with
coconut, coconut, coconut.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And finally, it seems like there's a greeting card for almost every occasion. But what about those lovers who are too broke from the recession to buy a Valentine's gift? The card company Order of St. Nick has some perfect printed sentiments.
Box of chocolates? She'll be lucky to get a box of rocks for me this year. Tough times call for tough love.
I made you a Valentine, but I had to burn it in the trash can to stay warm.
Friends with benefits? Only if you're talking about health, 401k, and dental.
Remember, it's the thought that counts. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.